Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, November 24th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube, or you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to, that's questions plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading tonight. We're going to be starting a new book. We're in Corinthians, I believe. Yep, we'll be reading out of Corinthians, starting Corinthians 1 Corinthians chapter 1, read by Alexander Scorby. So Corinthians by Alexander Scorby.
The first epistle of Paul the Apostle to the Corinthians, chapter 1. Paul, called to be an apostle of Jesus Christ through the will of God, and Sosthenes our brother, unto the church of God which is at Corinth, to them that are sanctified in Christ Jesus, called to be saints, with all that in every place call upon the name of Jesus Christ our Lord, both theirs and ours, grace be unto you and peace from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. I thank my God always on your behalf for the grace of God which is given you by Jesus Christ, that in everything ye are enriched by him, in all utterance and in all knowledge, even as the testimony of Christ was confirmed in you, so that ye come behind in no gift, waiting for the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, who shall also confirm you unto the end, that ye may be blameless in the day of our Lord Jesus Christ. God is faithful, by whom ye were called unto the fellowship of his Son, Jesus Christ our Lord. Now I beseech you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye all speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, but that ye be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. For it hath been declared unto me of you, my brethren, by them which are of the house of Chloe, that there are contentions among you. Now this I say, that every one of you saith, I am of Paul, and I of Apollos, and I of Cephas, and I of Christ. Is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you, or were ye baptized in the name of Paul? I thank God that I baptized none of you but Crispus and Gaius, lest any should say that I had baptized in mine own name. And I baptized also the household of Stephanus. Besides, I know not whether I baptized any other. For Christ sent me not to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not with wisdom of words, lest the cross of Christ should be made of none effect. For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us which are saved it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For after that in the wisdom of God the world by wisdom knew not God, it pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. For the Jews require a sign, and the Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, unto the Jews a stumbling block, and unto the Greeks foolishness. But unto them which are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God, and the wisdom of God, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For ye see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty, and base things of the world, and things which are despised hath God chosen, yea, and things which are not, to bring to naught things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. But of him are ye in Christ Jesus, who of God is made unto us wisdom, and righteousness, and sanctification, and redemption, that, according as it is written, he that glorieth, let him glory in the Lord.
Okay, let's see, we'll turn the Q&A mode on. Anybody has a question or a comment and like to get into the queue, *6 and a 1. If you're on a phone, Apple browser should be a button to get into the queue. Jan, do we have any questions tonight? You're muted if you're talking. Jan?
Can you hear me, John?
We can hear you now. Still,
wow.
Still struggling with your computer, huh?
That's a first. Okay. There is one question tonight, the same question from two different people. We have a question from Vicki in Kansas and from Missoula in Missouri, and they're identical. I don't know whether, in fact, they're just sending out IRS statements to a bunch of people to see how much money they can collect or what, but I'll read you one, and it's the same for both. First one is from Vicki. It says, "Hi, John, I'm Vicki. I live in Kansas, and I'm referred by Azula Williams in Missouri. I received a letter from Dove Legal Group out of St. Paul, Minnesota. The letter states garnishment of wages concerning past due amount for Kansas Department of Revenue, approximately just under $1,000 for 3 years. That's 2021, 2022, and 2023. I have until 12/9/25 to either pay in full, request a payment plan, or dispute the debt. How can I respond to this? I appreciate your help and expertise in this matter."
All right. When you read that, what was the name of the
question?
It was from a legal group, this letter came to that person, did you say? Or from the the state taxation or the IRS? Did you get that, Jan?
No, I didn't. I had your volume turned down so it wouldn't ring around.
Yeah, when in the beginning of that paper that you were reading there, they say they mentioned a group, some kind of a legal group. Read that again.
Okay. I received a letter from Dove, that's D-O-V-E, as in the white dove of peace.
Do we know what that is, Dove Legal Group?
Oh, it's probably just a collection agency with a nice name.
Oh, well, if it's a collection agency,
yeah.
You know, there is a process. I need to look into this. I believe I have some information on this. I know Gerard had a lot of information on this, and he shared this with me a while back. And I never really dug deep into it, but there is a process that you can have these people that are chasing you to stop chasing you. Especially if it's from some kind of a bill or something, you know, even those people who record, your credit levels. There's a few of them companies. I think there are three of them, if I recall. I don't remember. But in any event, if they've got some bad things on your credit score things, you can require them to remove them because it's against the law for them to post anything like that unless there was a court case, and of course, then that was filed, then they can file that. But anything other than that, it's hearsay and it's damaging, and they need to prove that it is in fact a bill that is truly owed. And of course, they can't really do that; they just get reports or whatever the case may be from wherever they get them from. So I have to look into that, see once if we can put some kind of a strategy up for that to respond. And if anybody has bad credit, to help clean their credit up, to get all this information that's on your credit review. But this sounds like, yes, some legal group. I would send them a letter and tell them to give you a proof of the claim. What are they talking about? Give me a proof of claim. They probably and in that letter, you need to maybe tell them to cease and desist. If it's from the IRS or from the state tax, then how I would respond, and I have responded to the IRS on numerous occasions with this, whereas they would make a claim that I owed X amount of dollars, and I would send a letter in and tell them, you know, that I'm not aware of that claim, and they need to send me a proof of claim. I usually send them a copy of the two forms, fiduciary authority and proof of claim. One's a form 56, and the other one's a 4490, I think, or I forget the number on that. I think it's 44 or 4190. But in any event, one's a proof of claim, one is a proof of fiduciary authority. And I always tell, keep it short, maybe a paragraph, and I always tell them that I would pay any lawful tax I need to pay if I truly own this, owe this, let me know and respond to me as soon as possible. And what happens is, first of all, they take a couple of months to respond. Once you send a letter in, okay, they will send you a letter back telling you that they received your letter and that it's going to take us a couple of months to look into the matter and we'll get back to you. And then a couple of months later, they'll send you another letter saying, we need more time because we haven't been able to figure this out yet. And that's if you truly don't owe anything to them. And they love to go after people claiming that they owe something that they don't. I know one time they came after me for $150,000. And what they did is they just got into my account, saw X amount of dollars in a particular account, and claimed that I owed tax on that. And whatever that account amount was, that's what they were going after me for. So, again, a lot of this stuff from people who haven't been reporting, they'll give you a bogus thing because they've dug some information up somewhere. So they really can't respond or do anything. And this, once you go through this one part of the process, you might hear back from them a year or two later, and you go through the same thing again. And you send the letters, and they respond back and tell you they're going to need some time, a couple of months, and then they're going to be back to you, we need more time, and then they'll disappear for a year or two, and so on. That has been my experience over quite a few years now. Dove Legal Group, yeah, you kind of wonder who they are. Maybe you can look them up on the Internet and find out who they are. Maybe you can give them a call, find out who they are. Do some research, find out what information they have, what they're chasing you for, and if they have a proof of claim on that. And if not, you got to cease and desist. Leave me alone. So, then at some point, you can sue them if they continue to harass you.
There is a Dove Legal Advocacy and about half a dozen Dove attorneys in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and I assume it's one of them.
I don't know why they would be sending out a letter, and it's claiming to be a tax or some kind of state tax, is that what they're claiming?
Yeah, from Kansas.
That's the other thing that I found, is that at least the state is chasing tax, at least here in New York. Okay, I don't know any other state situation just here in New York, and it may be the same everywhere. Sometimes if they chase after you for money, the state that is, maybe unemployment if you're an employer or they claim you're an employer, or certain taxes from the state, I found that they're pretty much paper tigers. They never pursue it and go to try to do anything about it because they really can't. The IRS is of the federal government and or collecting for the federal government, they claim they're collecting for the federal government. That's a different animal altogether. They're very bold. They're protected. But I think with the state, they're just kind of nervous about trying to go after someone for taxes because, these taxes are all unlawful. Now, if you're working some business and you're collecting tax and therefore you're charging tax, I mean, that's a whole different story. They're going to come out after you if you owe that kind of tax money. But anyway, I would dig around to find out who they are. I'd send a letter. I'd demand a response. And I'd be polite in the beginning. And if you send a letter in, get back to us. I'd like to know how they respond if they do, and then maybe give some suggestions to what to do next, maybe. But first, you got to find out what's going on because, you know, it doesn't sound right. Okay, that's the only question for the name?
Yes, I did find a Dove legal group there at 444 Highway 96 East Street, St. A. in Vanis Heights, Minnesota. That's a suburb of Minneapolis, so you should be able to get a hold of them. They've got an address on the internet and so on. They're probably full numbers.
I don't understand why a legal group would be coming out going after taxes.
Money. They get a cut of the money they collect.
Yeah, something. If it's a collection agency, yeah. And again, you get back to the collection agencies, the same situation. Where's your proof of claim? Who are you people? By what authority? You know, where's the agreement? Where's the contract? Where's the proof of claim? And if it's a court, then where's the fiduciary authority? You know, if they claim that it's just some kind of a court case that you defaulted on or whatever the case may be with that, I don't know. So, all right, is that the only question for the night?
Yes, it is, John. You're free and clear.
Okay, thank you. All right, we have one person in the queue right now. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? Star 601 if you're on a phone, and if you're on an app or browser, there should be a button. But tonight, before we start taking questions, I'd like to look a little bit to talk about courts of record. Now, we were looking at the book Memorandum of Common Law, and this is in, let me see what we called it. There's 12. Yeah, the preface. Okay, we called it the preface. So the preface is quite a few pages. I guess it looks like it's maybe about 8 or 9 pages. A lot of good information. We've read most of this already. This is the last section. It's a couple of pages, and it's a court of law versus courts of chancery. And again, this is the preface, sort of the introduction to the book, which is the Memorandum of Common Law by John Darash. And if anybody's interested in this book, you can find it under Welcome tab here and click on Books by John Darash, and you'll find the book in here where you can get some information. We've got Government by Consent, Court Access in the Common Law, Memorandums of Law, Common Law. So that book's available up on Amazon. And again, if you click on that, on this button, the details, you'll get a lot of the details of the book, and if you're interested, then you can purchase it. Okay, but going back to the book in itself, and it's, like I said, a couple of pages, a lot of great information. For people who don't understand what a court of record is, this is extremely important. A court of record ultimately is one which proceeds according to the common law. And I like to use the word natural law, because, again, I know I spoke about this recently, natural law and opposed to common law. Because when you talk to lawyers, they truly believe that common law has something to do with comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y, which is really trial court decisions, which is meaningless. It means nothing, because it's just the court making its own, rules and turning them into some kind of a law and calling it common law. And they'll use a lot of cases that are unlawfully won, maybe cases that people were unable to defend themselves, cases where people just abandoned, and then they make their decisions, file it, and then people use these decisions. But there are just a lot of bad decisions. And again, it's appealable, so it really has no standing at all, ultimately. Of course, there is the legal process, and you know, it does have some clout if you don't challenge the decision of the trial court. But when you bring up the word natural law in opposed to common law to a lawyer, from that point, they're not sure, they don't know what to do with that, because they can't call their common law natural law because it's not natural law. And that's something I recently realized. I probably should have realized that a long time ago, but because I've spoken to a lot of lawyers and different people that really believe they were under Roman law. Okay, so let's look at courts of law versus courts of chancery. Esquire's covertly changed our constitutional courts of law to repugnant chancery courts, and that brings us to civil law. In the United States, federal courts, magistrate judges are judges appointed to assist U.S. district court judges in the performance of their duties. Magistrate judges generally oversee first appearances of criminal defendants. They set bail and conduct other administrative duties. Magistrate judges are appointed by a majority vote of the federal district judges of a particular district. And even the way they use these magistrate judges is incorrect and unlawful. Although some of this, of course, power is okay, but they'll use a magistrate judge to sit in a court that's supposed to be a court of law, you know, court and not a court of equity, but they turned it into civil law. And then they will actually make decisions. And, you know, that is unlawful. None of these judges can make any summary decisions. But the people don't know that, so they deal with that. They don't deal with that problem, and they fall prey to these courts. Okay, yeah, right here it says administrative law judges, ALJs, resolve disputes in federal employment. That's correct. Acting as impartial adjudicators, they hear cases involving grievances, discrimination, and disciplinary actions. And that's if you give them the authority to do so. ALJs handle a broad spectrum of federal employment disputes, including allegations of discrimination, retaliation against whistleblowers, and adverse employees' actions. ALJ serves as a neutral decision makers in employment proceedings, handling cases such as employee grievances and disciplinary actions. ALJ rulings shape federal employment policies by interpreting statutes and regulations in cases, in case contexts, influencing future policies and administrative practices. The same is true in any state court that is proceeding in equity under statutes or contract. So equity jurisdiction is, in general sense, the jurisdiction belonging to a court of equity. And a court of equity is the authority in that, of course, is legislative law, which is what we've been talking about here. So that's all lawful for them to proceed in that, for anybody who is working for a government agency or if you are operating in commercial activity on a federal level, interstate commercial activity. On a state level, of course, then it would be state commercial activity that the state would be responsible for. But once they go outside the state, they then fall into the jurisdiction of the federal, federal jurisdiction. So equity jurisdiction in general sense, the jurisdiction belonging to a court of equity, but more particularly aggregate of those cases, controversies, and occasions which form proper subjects for the exercise of the powers of a chancery court. Now, if there's a criminal thing to this, if someone is brought up on criminal charges in one of these courts, at that point in time, according to our Constitution and the true law of the land, at that point in time, that case has to go into a law court, not an equity court. And again, the difference of a law court and an equity court. Again, equity court is a court that's under proper legislative law, which is called positive law. And law cases are that which that's which goes forward under the common law, shall I say, natural law. Whenever any of the aforesaid equity courts seize jurisdiction in criminal cases or in suits of common law, they fraudulently proceed as summary proceedings, whereas any proceeding by which a controversy is settled, case disposed of, or trial conducted in a prompt and simple manner without the aid of a jury, without presentment or indictment. Equity courts and law courts, the former being such as possess the jurisdiction of a chancellor, apply, and again, chancellors, well, I guess maybe the word chancellor or the idea of a chancellor might be used in an equity court. So, but definitely a chancery court should not be anything that's going to deal with anything where people can lose their liberty, lose any their ownership of anything or their money, or a criminal type situation. Then these courts cannot proceed then. So anyway, they apply the rules and principles of chancery law and follow the procedures of inequity, the latter such as have no equitable powers, but administer justice according to the rules and practices of the common or natural law. The term equity in chancery, courts of equity, and courts of chancery are constantly used as synonymous in the United States. Civil law, Roman civil law, are convertible phrases, meaning the same system of jurisprudence. And that is what every lawyer is taught, that we are under Roman law, and it's called civil law. Are convertible phrases, meaning the same system of jurisprudence. That rule of action, which every particular nation, commonwealth, or city has established, peculiarly for itself, more properly called municipal law, to distinguish it from the law of nature and from international law. Whenever any of the aforesaid chancery courts seize jurisdiction in criminal cases or in suits of common law, they fraudulently proceed with unlawful summary proceedings outside of the regular course of the common law. Such proceedings lack due process and are in violation of the following. Amendment 5 says no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without the due process. And due process has to go through a court of justice, a court of law. An infamous crime, by the way, it's not from that the crime itself that makes it infamous. It's the penalty. In other words, a jail sentence for whatever the crime may be, that's what makes it infamous. They will tell you that an infamous crime is any crime that requires a jail sentence but is less than a year, and so therefore then they claim they can go forward even without an indictment. Of course, if you make that challenge and push it, they usually bend for that because that's a real big push beyond the pale here. Okay, so infamous crime, unless on a presentment or indictment by the grand jury, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to the speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and the district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and the cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Now, again, they'll push a lawyer onto you. They don't want any of the people getting in there talking. They don't want people who are self-educated coming in there, taking care of their own business or assisting someone else. So it's a big battle. Clearly the law says assistance of counsel, and we're not required to take bar attorneys as our assistants of counsel. The other thing here, you have the right to obtain your own witnesses in your own favor, and a lot of times, they've written the rules of the court. They've written them. They've gotten rid of the rules of common law, and they wrote their own rules. And one of the rules, ultimately, well, a group of rules that they've written also, is for evidence, rules of evidence, and that could be in criminal or it could be even in a civil case. And what they will do in that is they've laid out certain rules where they can discharge or discard evidence. And I've seen this happen a lot. We've seen a lot of this happen in the Bundy case. Well, I guess the Bundys and the Hammonds, those cases. We saw a lot of that took place, and I've seen it in other places, where they bring in evidence, it's rock-solid evidence, and the judge will not allow it to come into the case. And that happens all the time, because really they're looking for a conviction here. And therein, of course, is the major problem. So under common law, your evidence can be, it doesn't matter what your evidence could be. Everyone could look at it and say, that's crazy, that's not good evidence. Well, under common law, you have a right to bring that in, and that's up to the jury to look at that evidence and make their decision on what they think, if that evidence has any merit, in your case. So all evidence should go forward. That's the point. They will throw all kinds of evidence out. Many, if not all, these chancery courts claim that they can try people for misdemeanors and thereby fine and or incarcerate them without an indictment, claiming that a misdemeanor is not an infamous crime. I just mentioned that earlier. Whereas an offense is infamous depends on the punishment which may be imposed. It is not the character of the crime, but the nature of the punishment which renders the crime infamous. Therefore, any alleged crime that results in a prison sentence is infamous. Only the people can sentence an individual to prison. Judges cannot do it. They do it all the time. Even if you plead guilty, if you went into court and plead guilty, it's still up to the jury should still be pulled and listen to the case, all the evidence against the person, and the response of the person that's committed claiming that they're guilty. And they're the ones that are to decide. No judge, no individual, no person working for the government can really impose a penalty of jail or any kind of a penalty upon you. Only the people can do that. Yet it happens all day long. And it happens because, we the people are ignorant to these things. So that's why we need to understand how the court system works, and we need to work together to bring our courts of justice back. And courts are not there to apply the law. Courts are there to apply justice. And quite often, the law that they're applying up against you is unjust. Okay, courts of record, courts of record and courts not of record. The following is also true in state courts. Courts of law are courts of record that proceed according to the common law, natural law. All criminal cases require an injured party, and the state cannot be the injured party. Of course, there could be a crime against maybe someone stealing money or something like that. They're really stealing it from the people, so to a certain degree, it's not that the state is the injured party, it's the people of the state. And they'll play a lot with that one, of course. The tribunal is a free and independent jury of 12 people whose decision is final. It cannot be overturned, a decision of a jury. Not even the United States Supreme Court can overturn the decision of a jury. Of course, at a later time, if certain evidence comes up and shows that the person really didn't commit that crime, of course, something can be done about that. Also, if someone's unalienable rights were injured in that particular court case, then, of course, that could be reconsidered. But the penalty against the individual that's being tried and the people making the decision, that cannot be overturned, and yet they do overturn these cases. Sometimes a judge will throw the case out and start all over. Sometimes the judge will, instruct the jury that when they come in, it may be, you got 12 jurists. If it's maybe 7 of the 12 jurists find the person guilty and the others don't, they can come in with a guilty plea. But of course, that's not the law. Not the common law, the law of the land. All 12 people must find the person either guilty or innocent, and they're to remain, discussing the case until they come up with a decision. I think it was a case against Trump where they broke the jury into three parts and said, you people decide on this issue, you people decide on that issue, and you people decide on the other issue. And that's total insanity. But again, they did it. They did it in public. It was one of the cases about Trump, against Trump, a year or two ago, and nobody says anything. The people just swallow it and take it on. The people who should know what's going on, They don't make a complaint about, against this. And we just keep falling deeper and deeper into submission to these individuals. And again, the only thing that's going to cure this is an education and the people standing up and taking matters into their own hand on a on the grassroots level through committees of safety. Let's see. The tribunal is a free and independent jury of 12 people whose decision is final and which there is no appeal. It is we the people that bring the indictment, and it is we the people that decide the facts, the law, remedy, and or the penalty. Not a sole hired servant judge. A servant has no authority over the master. And that's the mindset we should have. Administrative courts are equity, in other words, statutory courts, not of record, that proceed according to statutes and do not yield to the common law and whose results are the will of the state. And that's why there's no due process. When people apply a particular statute against you in a court, that lacks due process because it automatically makes you guilty if you broke that statute, or if they can show that you broke that statute. And that statute, again, is not due process. So due process can only be gotten in a court of law. That's a court, of course, that's running by the people themselves. So these courts do not, let me see where I'm at here. Yeah, these courts do not have the power to fine or incarcerate and are called nisi prius courts, Latin for unless first, meaning people are not obligated to participate in these courts unless they agree first. They do this by participating in commercial activities or employment within the government. And that's why they always try to get a plea. And when people reject giving a plea, you know, you'll be coming back month after month. I was involved with a case almost a whole year, every month going back into the court, every month refusing to make a plea, every month going through insanity. I think now, though, they're much bolder now. They just don't care. They put the plea in for you. They move along, and that's that. They don't care. Because they've got more and more control. They've got more and more protection. So whenever an individual is summoned and thereby hijacked into a secret nisi prius court, or their case as plaintiff is hijacked into a secret nisi prius court, the judge and barristers are guilty of fraud on the court in violation of USC 42, 19, subsection 1983, for commandeering their victims secretly to jurisdictions unknown as they refuse to state on the record the jurisdiction. Every case I've ever been to, every case I've ever tried to get the judge or the individuals on the other side, you know, the law requires jurisdiction to be on your paperwork. And so when you're responding or whatever the case, or the judge makes a decision, they have to name the jurisdiction. They refuse to name the jurisdiction. I think that's because they know they're breaking the law. Whereas law courts, law requires jurisdiction to appear on a record. Some examples of these kinds of courts are housing courts, Department of Labor courts, compensation courts, village courts, town courts, city courts, or any court proceeding in equity. In short, courts not of record. One of the ways that these nisi prius courts seize personal jurisdiction is by forcing the plaintiff to use the word complaint, in opposed to an action at law. And even when the plaintiff refuses to comply and proceeds under an action at law, the court proceeds under civil law. A complaint is the first interrogatory pleading on the part of the plaintiff in a civil action governed by statutes and not common law. Black's law defines civil law, Roman civil law are convertible phrases meaning the same system of jurisprudence. Every federal district or state court is to have a court of record, also known as natural law courts, which is presided over by the people, 12 jurists, where the ALJ or justice presides as judge. It is an equity court under statutes or contract. The Constitution is legislated law by we the people, also known as the law of the land. Thereby, Amendment 6 is clear that judges cannot hear, decide, or sentence criminal cases. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right of a speedy trial, public trial, or by an impartial jury of the state and the district wherein the crime shall have been committed. We the people granted and defined judicial powers in Article 3, Section 2. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. And again, equity is legislative law. Law is common law. Whereas law is common law separate from equity. All codes, rules, and regulations are for government authorities only, not human creators in accordance with God's law. All codes, rules, and regulations are unconstitutional and lacking due process. The common law is the real law, the supreme law of the land. The codes, rules, regulations, policies, and statutes are not the law. The extent of the authority for an ALJ or justice to hear cases in law is limited in Article 3, Section 2, where we read, "The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution, the laws of the United States." The key phrase concerning the law, meaning common law or natural law, is arising under this Constitution, which limits the extent of the federal court's ability to hear the case for cause alone. Being understood that in law, they can only judge the constitutionality of the law and thereby champion the Constitution. Any issue in law beyond that must be heard by the people, also known as a petit jury. Whereas cases under the laws of the United States are understood as equity, also known as legislative law, and thereby administrative law. Thereby, any case under equity where a crime has been committed must be heard by the people, who, being sovereign, have the unalienable right of nullification. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the king. His majesty, and the king, of course, is Christ, his majesty, because we're a Christian nation, we're under the laws of nature, and of nature's God, his majesty in the eye of the law is always present in all his courts, and he's present through the jury. Though he cannot personally distribute judges, his judges, also known as the petit jury, are the mirror by which the king's image is reflected. So we're to judge people by the heart. We know when a wrongdoing has been done and what needs to be done to fix that wrongdoing. And of course, court cases are to proceed under the common law, which really is common sense. It's a construction of maxims, and through that you find truth. So law is very easy to understand. Common law, or shall I say natural law, is very easy to understand. Less than 2% of federal criminal cases go to jury trial. A 2020 study sheds light on the reason so many people forego their duty in court, their day in court. The right to trial by an impartial jury is enshrined in the United States Constitution. But the U.S. courtrooms today, the vast majority of people forego this right, opting instead to settle or plead guilty because the prosecutor will offer a lesser prison sentence than that a statute might provide for. This is an abuse of alleged authority and a denial of due process where one size fits all. Whereas under common law, prosecutors do not have such authority. That authority belongs to the people to decide after hearing all the facts. Even if the defendant wants to plead guilty, it is not for the prosecutor, via legislation, to decide because in criminal cases, there are no statutes. But in a case where statutes may apply upon an individual because they are employed by the government or involved in commercial activity, a jury must be the final arbiter after being fully informed in the case and with the consideration of nullification on whatever statutes might be applied on those individuals. Whereas statutes that violate the plain and obvious principles of common right and common reason are null and void, the general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having a form and the name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since the unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment. In legal contemplation, it is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principles follow, that it imposes no duties, it confers no rights, it creates no office, it bestows no power or authority on anyone. It affords no protection and justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing law. Indeed, insofar as a statute runs counter to the fundamental laws of the land, the Constitution, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. The state cannot diminish the rights of the people. A series of resolutions drawn up by Jefferson and adopted by the legislature of Kentucky in 1799, protesting against the alien and sedition laws, declaring that illegality, announcing the strict constitutionalist theory of a federal government, and declaring nullification to be the rightful remedy. Likewise, the 16th American Jurisprudence, second edition, section 177, which provides for the same, stating, the general misconception is that any statute passed by legislators bearing the appearance of law constitutes the law of the land. The U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and any statute to be valid must be in agreement. It is impossible for both the Constitution and a law violating it to be valid. One must prevail. This is succinctly stated as follows. And I think this is a repeat. Let me see. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since the unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment and not merely for the date of its decision. So of branding it. An unconstitutional law in legal contemplation is inoperative as if it had never been passed. Okay, this is just a repeat of what we said a little earlier, so I'll skip that. In conclusion, liberty is freedom from equity courts without our permission. In other words, free from government interference of our behavior. Unalienable rights are our inheritance and the spirit of natural law, the law of our Creator and not of man. All law is to be understood in light of our unalienable rights. Any law repugnant to that spirit is by nature creator null and void. The law of the land is the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution for the United States of America as defined in Article 6, Clause 2, and the Capstone Bill of Rights. These are all natural law documents that were constructed upon natural law principles. To deny natural law is to deny these documents, and to deny these founding documents would be treason. It therefore follows that the Organic Act of 1871 and all latter legislation constructed upon said act, and of course the Organic Act of 1871 turned us into a corporation, so we're the United States, Inc. And it's just a covering over, everything is still there. We just have to remove the corporate side of things. But anyway, including amendments 16 and 17 is null and void. 16, of course, is the income tax, and 17 is the election of senators. Only the sovereign people are endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights and can ordain and establish governments. Pseudo-governments are fictions, having no such powers. Okay. Right, I think that's the end of that, and then it goes into the different memorandums in this book. And I think there's a little over 30 memorandums in this book, and they're all common law memorandums. Going through these common law memorandums, they were written to deal with unlawful things going in the court and laying out the common law and the evidence against its use the way they do it, using statutes and regulations or whatever else they have, and their so-called common law. Okay, so let's. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? We're going to go to the queue now. Get into the queue if you're on the phone, *6 and 1. And again, if you're on a browser, there should be a button there to get in. We'll take a first caller here. There's only a couple people in the queue, so it's a good time to get in. Jeff, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Let me see. Did I get you unmuted? Should be unmuted now, Jeff. Go ahead.
Can you hear me now, John?
We can hear you.
Okay. I spoke with you, I guess, over a month ago about a situation where I was in the hospital for an extended period of time. And while I was in critical condition in the ICU unit, my house was tax sold by the Berks County Tax Claim Bureau without my knowledge and without posting the property or anything. They initiated, of course, prior to that, a lawsuit against me to try to recover back taxes. And that, of course, led to the medical emergency that I wound up in the hospital from all the stress. Now, as things stand right now, I wanted to give you an update.
It was a tax foreclosure, right, Jeff?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, they sold my property to an investment firm, a multi-billion-dollar investment firm, which is what they're doing. And I had to file what is called objections and exceptions to the tax sale in Pennsylvania.
Let me ask you two questions. What did they sell the house for at the auction, and what is the house actually worth? Do you know those numbers?
I do offhand. They sold it for $107,000 at auction, and it's worth, according to Zillow, $353,000.
And yeah, then that's what they do. It's a big game that they play on that, I'll tell you. And they'll go and sell it for $353,000.
Well, of course, yes. That's the one issue that I want to make clear is that I am disabled. I'm on oxygen 24 hours a day. I'm on breathing essentially, which is a miracle I can breathe at all, on one lung and a quarter of my left lung that was severely damaged by medical negligence. But I have to use a walker to get around. And it's just been, all I want to do is what God wants me to do in this life, and that is to root out wickedness in high places. And I believe he may have answered my prayer a little bit. So I filed the exceptions and the objections, and these attorneys for the county came back opposing everything. And so, amazingly, in their opposition to even a hearing, they just want the house, and they want me to be gone, you know. They submitted a false and fraudulent document, and the document itself is a blatant fraud on the court, and it's so bad that it's almost a miracle that they had the gall to do this. They claimed that they tried to post the house and I was home, and I threatened the poster, and the poster drove off and couldn't post the property. But because she made an attempt, that they should go ahead and just take the property. Now, the interesting part of this was on August 20th, 2025, while I was in intensive care in the hospital, clinging to life. So I have the doctor's letters, and fortunately I had a friend who had the good common sense to have the court notified by fax transmission from the hospital that I was there. And that goes back to this other lawsuit, but they came in with a double prong assault against me. Now, the part I want to bring out is that the court, I filed a reply to their opposition. I pointed out with photographs the forgery that they did. They lifted a signature from another document, and they put it on this fake posting report. And then they had longitude and latitude, but that corresponded to a property 2 miles away from me. So the whole document is a fraud. And I put that into the court on November the 3rd, I think it was. November 6th. I filed that on number 6th, and the judge came back, and she is requesting that these attorneys for the county file a brief explaining their actions, or she's going to throw the whole case out. Now, she's also scheduled a hearing for December the 4th, but I was sort of amazed that this happened, and I wanted to let you know what happened here, because these people are very brazen at this point. They think they can do anything they want to do and get away with it, that they can just walk all over people. And here they were so cocky, they didn't even think that someone would pick up that they submitted that they defrauded the court and committed a fraud upon the court, which is an extremely serious criminal act.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you a question. Did that judge throw the case out, or is that judge waiting for some paperwork from the other side before they decide to do something like that? Or has it been thrown?
Yeah, she should have just thrown it out or whatever, but they're waiting for the paperwork from the other side.
Right.
And I'm afraid... Yeah.
You're good. You're afraid
I'm afraid that they're going to lie and produce more fraud on the court, and I'm just going to be completely, destroyed.
Well, look, we, especially with the environment of these courts today, that we have to be very careful about. This is even why, and even if we get courts of law back and get a proper judicial process back in play in our courts, even if that happens, people should never leave themselves in a position where they don't understand how the courts work, how to exercise their unalienable right to go into a court and deal with the court, understanding due process and understanding what law that they can apply against you. Now, there's a lot of things that you can battle in this case. I mean, first of all, the tax in itself is unlawful. That's a real uphill battle that you're not going to win that, but it is a case to be made. And it could be a case, to be made at some point anyway, just so you have it on the record, so maybe one day when we get courts of justice back, which is what we're working on, trying to accomplish that goal, we get courts of justice back, you can resurrect this case. Because taxes are, tax on your property is unlawful. That means you don't own it. You pay taxes on anything you buy when you do the purchase. But once you have it, if you have to pay every year tax, obviously you don't own that property. And so that's an assault upon private property to begin with. Okay. The other thing have you been working on learning the law? Have you taken our course or some other course somewhere to learn the law?
Yeah, I started on your course to learn the law, and unfortunately, I've got a real old computer here, and there was just it didn't want to accept this old operating system, so I wasn't able to complete it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm working on a new computer,
Go up on Amazon and get a laptop, and you can get maybe a Windows 10 or even something earlier than that. That'll work. And get that, and it's very cheap, these laptops. You can buy one for $200 maybe. You just keep searching around, you'll find it. So that might be helpful in order to get back into the course and have the ability to do what you have to do there. But, everybody should know the law. We need to teach our children the law in school. By the time any child comes out of 12th grade, once they've gone through the whole, K through 12, they should know what kind of a nation we are, that we're a Christian nation. They should know the difference between law and equity. They should know the Constitution. They should understand their unalienable right of government by consent and how to exercise that government by consent. Which you work together with other people in the county, creating committees of safety, and binding down the governments by the chains of the Constitution, which is what Jefferson told us to do. Use the Constitution. But right now they don't listen to anything. They don't listen to the Constitution or nothing, because they don't fear nothing. They've got such a control on our judicial and political process. I mean, look at the judge just recently threw out the case against that... the Attorney General down there in New York City and Comey, okay? And you know, that's going to go back into the court again. But that's how bold these people are, you know. They throw cases out all the time. Just almost every case I've been involved with, they throw out of the court at some point. They'll do it. They just don't care. But anyway, one of the things you can do if you don't get satisfaction on this level, what is this, a county court or a state court, or what kind of court is it?
They call it a commonwealth court.
So, and that's on the state level, do you know, or county level?
I believe it is. Well, this one is in the county level, yes.
Okay. Yeah, but what you should do is take a look into the into your constitution. What state did you say you're in?
This is Pennsylvania.
Oh, goodness, you're in trouble there.
Not a good one. Yes, you're right.
Well, we'll go to your state constitution and see if it's called a court of record. And if it's not a court of record, then it's not a court of common law, even though they don't recognize common law, but it is something, it's something you can use in your paperwork to make your case, okay? Because, again, once we resurrect the justice in our courts, resurrect the republic, and hopefully we're going to be able to do that. But that people need to get behind this in order to do this. They have to be, and if they don't step up to do what they have to do, then we're going to lose our liberty. And that's just the way it is, you know. Only the people can protect our Constitution. Only the people can really maintain the law and order. But then that's done through knowledge, education. So we all must know this. People who have gone through school and already working or even retired or whatever should be taking our courses. And we need to make sure we get a proper education for our children. But one of the things you could do, though, at some point in time, if you don't get the proper response from this court, then you could take it to federal court for cause, for denial of the due process. Now, if it's kicked out, then they come back out after you again, okay?
Right, right.
You have, and that's why you better get educated and be prepared for that. And you got to make some good cases against them and good arguments against these people. Because they really don't have the power and the authority to do what they're doing. Now, do you actually owe taxes according to them in what they think is lawful? Or do you think you don't own taxes at all because you paid it? Or what's the condition of the case as far as the tax? Even though it's an unlawful tax, what is the condition of the case right now, and how much do you owe in taxes?
I owe about $70,000 in taxes, and it wasn't because I was opposed to the taxes. We did find out, you know, years ago that they were unlawful. It's a recurrent tax. And
how does it get to $70,000?
I went bankrupt to stop the tax sale. I actually went down to $400 to my name. I had multiple deaths in my family, so I had to deal with grief on levels that few people have ever had to deal with. And then they left me alone. After the bankruptcies, they left me alone for a few years. And then when they came back, like in 2018, I filed another bankruptcy, and that stopped that tax sale. And then they left. And then we had the COVID mess that came on. So from 2020 to 2019 to 2021, they left me alone. And then I filed another bankruptcy. I've been in four times, and at that point they left me alone. And then for several years again, and then on to this past year they came after me again, and I had been barred by the judge in the bankruptcy court from filing any for more bankruptcies to stop the tax sale. So and then I got sick and wound up in the hospital. So they have me for about, it's about a 15-year period.
Okay.
In back taxes.
And what are they charging you taxes a year, roughly?
Unfortunately, well, they went up from $3,500 to almost $6,000 a year now.
Wow. Yeah, they don't stop, do they?
No.
Well, look at. Hopefully things will go well and they'll make the right decision. They'll have to redo the whole case and you can start, kind of dragging your feet in the court on this thing and stretch it out as long as, you know, as long as you possibly can. You should be able to stretch it out for quite a long time. In that process, you know, hopefully the courts, we'll get our courts back. And if we get our courts back, then, you know, the courts of justice won't permit this at all, because you can't tax something I own. So you can't tax something you own. Okay? That in itself obviously is unlawful. It's repugnant. It's a violation of a right of property. And so I would make all the cases I could to make argument. But you have to be able to, you know, weather through the due process. And, you know, in the courses, you know, you got to think real simple with the course that we put together, or any course really in going into the courts, because really what you need to learn is the due process, okay? That is the key that people have to learn. Common law in itself is extremely easy, okay, because it's just common sense. And and through our course, we give a lot of information. I got footnotes. And if you go through the footnotes in itself, you know, that I've, it's just a collection of footnotes I've used over the years, and I'm constantly using those same footnotes. I haven't had to add much to them over, you know, in the past couple of years, because I guess I got a lot of footnotes and I cover a lot of bases in them. But that'll teach you in itself, going through footnotes will teach you the common law, because it's common sense and it lays out that process, because that's what, you know, yes, it's all about. What we're teaching is court access and the common law. So everybody should know these things, and it's not difficult at all. And the case in itself is always about the facts, okay? And the facts, you build your facts, you know, line upon line, precept upon precept in your facts, and bring a case together in a common sense manner, using maxims, okay? There's plenty of maxims out there that you can use, and a maxim is a truth that can't be denied, and truth is self-evident, yes, to begin with. So really the case, when you argue a case, really the case is really about the facts, and you back up certain things or meanings. Unfortunately, you have to do a lot of time with that. Really, we get to the other side, you don't have to back up the meaning of these things, the words and the phrases that you're using. But you have to be able to go through the due process. And the due process is a procedure. And the procedure is quite simple when you really look at it all together. You know, when you file your papers, there's four or five papers that you file with it. You know, when you bring a case, if you're going to build your own case, okay, and you have to have a summons, and you have your papers, and, you know, it's really a process. And you have to have all of these things, and you have to have proof of service that you serve this on the other side. And it's all logical when you look at this. And all those forms are available in the course. Plus, I believe we give a website, when you go, you can go into your own state and get all of the different forms. You can go to federal level and get the forms, because you use federal level forms, federal forms also in any state. So, you know, all the forms that you're going to file is just procedural, making a motion, okay, and then notifying the other side of that motion and proving that you served that to the other side. It's all logic. It's logical. So it's not difficult. People may think this is difficult. It really isn't. You know, when you use codes, you know, U.S. codes particularly, you know, we've put together a list of codes that might be used going up against these people who are breaking the law, like judges, okay? And they have to, the codes can be applied upon them. It is, you know, what controls their behavior. And whatever penalty might be charged against them should they, you know, break those codes. So, and there's not that many of them either, but again, you know, just by the topic that we give it, you can see whether you need that kind of a code in your case or not. So, but anyway, I think you got a lot of chances to make some changes here.
I hope they're for the better. Yes.
Going to come back at it again.
I did have one question though. Does National Liberty Alliance still have court watchers?
People have never been active enough in it. A long time ago, we had an individual who really was a good organizer, had knowledge of the courts, had been filming in the courts for years, understands the system, and he was working with us, and he was running the court watchers, and it was pretty successful then. But that individual is no longer with us, and we need someone like that to be able to run that part of the process, where we can help people in the court with court watches, going in, making the filming. You know, you have to get permission to film, and I can understand the you've got to get the permission, but they should never give you a denial. Okay, you know, they may deny certain parts of the case. Maybe if there's a child involved or something, you know, they may not permit you to videotape that. But the rest of the case, you might be able to videotape. But sometimes it's sensitive, and it's understandable that you really can't videotape it. But nevertheless, I think those cases can also still be videotaped for the by the other side for the purpose of really documenting the case if they wanted to bring something up for an appeal or something. And that might be logical. I'm not sure. But I know this guy, he never got a refusal from coming in with recorders and cameras and videotaping cases. But again, we don't have anyone doing that with us anymore. We need someone with that knowledge to be able to, and the time to put into it to do that.
Sure, yeah.
Now, if we can go professional, maybe we can find somebody and hire them out. But, of course, that requires a lot of money. Hang on one second. I got to walk away from my computer for a second. My dog locked herself in, and I got to let her out. Hang on.
Okay.
All right, I'm back.
Oh.
All right, well, anyway, do you have any other questions or anything you might want to tell us about?
No, it's just that I'm sort of alone going up against this beast system, and I just, I'm not quite as confident as David who went against Goliath, you know, and it is a Goliath. They're controlling so many lives and so many aspects of our jurisprudence system. It's just horrible. It really is. And
well, how old are you? I know you said you were disabled.
I'm 70 years old, John.
Okay. Are you a veteran?
No.
Because if you were a veteran, you can get help from other veterans. But there's all kinds of programs out there. You know, it's a shame what these people do. Let me ask you, when they decided to go forward to try to go after you and take this house, and they finally got it into the courts, let's say, how long did that court system run, do you know? You were in a hospital at the time. Was it a month, 2 months, 3 months, or how long?
They filed the initial, it was a two-prong attack. They filed a complaint to, what was it, something to... got it here somewhere. It was a complaint to for the liens to impose the tax debt as liens against the property, and that was filed. That was served on me on June the 4th. On June the 29th, I wound up in the hospital in critical condition, and no doubt as a result of the stress of that lawsuit. And they were asking for $105,000 there, but then. They went while I was in the hospital. They went ahead with a tax sale while the litigation was ongoing about perfecting the liens. So,
all right. Well, let me ask you. Now, you said it was. Let me see. I took a note of that. You said it was purchased by some corporation, and that was for $107,000. How much did they client get to the at some point when they finally? You know, sort of stabilized with their position. How much taxes did they claim you owe?
Oh, I have the thing here. It was $107,000.
Okay, so they sold it the exact price for that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times they may take you home. You owe maybe $10,000, $20,000, and they take you home, and then someone buys it for $30,000 or $40,000 or whatever they get for it, and then they turn around and sell it for $200,000, whatever the case may be. The thing is, though, you know, the fact of the matter is, and they just won't do this. Let's say, and I'll try to make this easy. Let's say you owed $100,000 in taxes. Let's say they sold it at an auction for $150,000. Well, guess who you think that $50,000 should go to, minus the fees and the courts and everything else? It should go to you. They won't do that, and they never do that. Okay, they're just thieves all over the place. You know, they just don't stop with their evil. It's all about money. And that's why lawyers are really hard to control, because and they don't want to hear anything about common law. You know, they got a good thing going for them from their perspective. It's all about money to them. Every lawyer I've met, pretty much it's money, money, money. That's all it's about. They don't care whether they win or lose anyway, because they're going to get paid no matter what, you know. But, one of the things you might want to do, you know, just recently I tried Grok. I think I'm saying that right, on X. You know, by the way, I joined X. I think I mentioned this last week. National Liberty Alliance has a place on X right now, and we've opened up two communities. So anybody that's out on X, maybe you can visit us and, you know, kind of follow us and give us whatever it is, help us along the way to get more people, you know, to listen in and participate. But in any event, we did create two communities out there. One of the communities we created, of course, was Government by Consent, and then the other one is the Bible Only, so we do Bible studies. So we got two communities under National Liberty Alliance. So people might want to go out on X and maybe follow us and hopefully help us get kind of a bigger following, because we need to hit that critical mass in order to be able to go professional. We need enough support financially in order to do that. But while I was on there, my wife has been playing around with that for a few months, and she was telling me about Grok, which is AI. And AI is a problem. But I decided, you know, with society, you know, I think it's going to be the downfall of mankind. But we'll see. But the thing is she convinced me to try it, and recently I was trying to gather together a list of all of the different codes that deal with subversion, particularly, okay? And I used a few other words on that. And I just asked the question for Grok to list this out, and boy, they spit back a whole bunch of stuff. It must have been 20 different codes that spit back out at me. And they, you know, gave a little bit of information on each code, but it gives you the ability to give you the numbers so you can look it up and dig out the whole code. So I thought, wow, this is really can be very useful and helpful, because, you know, if you're a lawyer and you have a clerk working for you, usually a paralegal, you know, when you have a case coming up, you'll pass the research over to that clerk. You know, look up the cases that are involved with this, that, or the other thing, get me all the information on this particular case. And then, of course, you know, they can put together the case pretty easily. You know, I don't have anyone to do the research for me, but I'm thinking, you know, I think I'm going to get a lot of time saved now to be able to use something like Grok. So you might want to look into that. You might have certain questions, and it's unbelievable how this thing really picks up exactly what you're asking. It does a really great job. And, you know, I've asked them quite a different questions on places, you know, trying to work out problems with my computer, for instance, or how something works, like on X or some other program. And you ask the questions, and they give you really great answers. First of all, they kind of repeat the question in even a better way, so you start to see, yeah, that's exactly what I want. And then they list out all these things on whatever it is that you're asking and looking. And so, again, it's a real big time saver. Now, you can't really, on certain things like this, you can kind of trust it, but you got to be careful in what kind of questions you ask and what you might trust, because, you know, for instance, if you're asking biblical questions, I wouldn't trust it at all. I'd be interested to see what they say about this, that, or the other thing. But there's so many opinions out there and so many crazy ideas out there, in, for instance, in Bible studies and I'm sure other topics also, that you'll get a lot of bad stuff. So I don't know. So you got to be careful with that. But really doing research, like what codes, what Supreme Court cases has made decisions on this particular topic, not trial court cases. You want any of those? Any case you want to chase, you want to chase the appellate court decisions, because that is held up as law, yes. Or at least a precedent to some degree. And one of the other problems we have in the courts is they'll hold precedents up even against law. If you have a precedent that's been around for 40, 50 years, okay, it's hard to move that back, even though you can come and show, and I can show a lot of cases on different things that I can come up and lay it out without a doubt. It's unlawful, it's repugnant, it needs to be removed. But these courts will hold up the precedents because it's been a precedent for a long time, even above the Constitution. That's how bad it is. So it's a serious problem that we have to fix, and the only way we're going to fix it is if the people fix it. And the people have to get educated to fix this and get involved in their communities. And if they don't want to do that, then we're not going to be able to maintain our unalienable rights. And the Constitution will continue to be eroded away.
Well, yeah, we'll just be slaves. That's all we'll wind up, is slaves.
Go ahead. All right, well, we have two other people in the queue right now, so anything else before we move on?
No, thank you, John. You've been very helpful, and I'll try to keep you updated on
how
this goes.
Yeah, let me know what's going on. I'm interested in hearing how long it takes and before they get back to you, because they're going to come back at you again. They're going to file another case. And it's good that this judge is taking their time, because that's more time. And they're going to give them 30 days or whatever, and that's more time. And then when they come back, the judge is going to drag their feet on this, and that's more time. And then they're going to go back and refile in the courts again, and that's more time. So this may extend easily 3-4 months before you even have to start dealing with it. But now is the time of education.
Yes.
And again, you know, I would look deep into the Constitution, okay, because you want to make the case that you need a natural law court, which is referred to as a court of record, and you should learn how to make that position known. And you can use the Bill of Rights, you can use the Seventh Amendment in order to make this point. You can use the Fifth Amendment, so those are two particular that you can use. You can use the law of the land. You can make a case with that in the Constitution. I think that's Article 6, if I recall, the law of the land. And you can also use the jurisdiction of the courts, okay, and that would be in Article 3. So dig through the Constitution and look for anything that brings you into common or natural law. And one of the cases you want to make is that the law is natural law, and it's protected. It's the foundation of American law to begin with. It's the founding document, which is the Declaration of Independence, which puts us under the laws of nature and of nature's God. And you want to use that word nature and nature's God. You might want to refer to common law. You might refer a couple of times in the papers natural law under the laws of nature and nature's God,
yes.
A.K.A. common law. Okay. But the point is by going to the natural side of things, I don't know what kind of an argument they can possibly make that can claim that the common law that they think about, which is trial court decisions, is common law. So I don't know how they can make that case. But that's the kind of case I would make. And I'll think of other things, I'm sure, by the time next time we talk on this. So
okay.
As soon as you get a decision, let me know. I'm interested. Maybe I have some ideas at that point, too. But you really need to be working hard on this now.
Yes,
study,
I
study,
agree.
Study, prepare, write. You know, actually write your case now. Now is the time to write your case because you want to massage it. You want to, you know, whenever I write a case, I don't know of any paper I ever write that I don't read at least 10 times over. And even then, you know, at some point in time, you're never really happy with the final conclusion because you can always say, oh, I should have said this, or I could have added that, or maybe I should have said it this way. But if you're constantly massaging your case, less is usually better than more, okay? So if you could take If you could take a paragraph or two, let's say you could take five sentences, and if you can bring it down to three sentences, making it less, and finding the right words, using certain phrases. And every time you go back, you're going to massage and say, oh, let me use this word instead of that word. Let me say it this way instead of that way. And then everything you, as far as building the meaning of something, you use memorandums. You know, you make a point, you make the claim, you give the information, you refer it to the memorandum of law.
Yes.
That goes behind. And that keeps your case nice and clean. So that it's easily, it doesn't, because a lot of people, they pour so much on a piece of paper, I mean, it confuses everybody. And then the other side usually does the same thing because they want to confuse everybody, you know? So, all right, we're going to go on next caller.
All right, thank you, John.
All right, thank you. Okay, our next person is anonymous. You got the mic. And if you can give us your first name and your state.
Okay, let me turn it down. Feed the feedback. I'm taking off speaker. Yes, hello. This is hang on a second. This is Elizabeth. I'm in Arizona.
Right, we spoke before.
Yes, I've been reading the memorandums. I'm just trying to get a grip on this, and I am. But I was noticing it. I mean, are they meant to be sent to public officials, or can memorandums be sent to private companies or corporations?
Memorandums that I write. There's all kinds of memorandums and purposes and usage, but in law, a memorandum is expounding on a position, particularly in law. Okay, that's what a memorandum is. So if I was arguing a case and I made a point, and I make the point clear, maybe in a sentence or two, and then refer to the memorandum of law, which will expound on that to make the point to prove lay out the proof of the law in the case on that particular position. So you'd use a
memorandum to refer to inside of a memorandum. I misunderstood you. Yeah.
Let me see if I can open this up. Hang on a second.
I was thinking that in addition to an affidavit. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the
Affidavit is an affidavit of facts.
Right.
No law. You don't bring any law into it. You don't do anything. I was walking down the street, and as I turned the corner, somebody hit me with a club, and I saw a car, and they jumped into this car, and the license plate was there. You know, just the facts.
And you keep
that to the minimum. You don't want to leave any facts out, but you don't want to embellish on the facts. You don't want to get into anything more than the simple facts of the case.
Okay.
Now, the paper that you write refers to the memorandums, okay? I mean, it refers to the affidavit that you've written, and maybe others have written affidavits, and you make reference to that. You lay out the case in as simple a matter as possible on the one hand, and then you're laying out your position, and you refer to certain, common law maxims, or Constitution, Founding Father statements, quotes, or Supreme Court rulings, which is law.
How about inspector's reports? Can those be?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But remember, everything you get must be certified, must be sworn to, any evidence you put in the court. For instance, if someone took pictures of a situation for your case, or you took the pictures, okay, well, someone has to write the affidavit that on certain date at a certain time I took X amount of pictures, and you describe basically the pictures, or you number the pictures, and you put a number on them, that you personally took that. It's an accurate representation of what was taking place and what was going on. Now, that is something that is the facts of the case, and you can't argue against those facts. I mean, because it's been sworn to, that they swear to it through an affidavit. Okay, if you don't do that, it'll be ignored. They may throw it all out and tell you why, and you'll say, "Well, I heard all these pictures." You don't. They're not going to explain that to you. Okay,
right.
out or ignore it. So that's the important thing. Now,
no, a memorandum, though, is about talking about the law, then.
Memorandum is usually talking about the law, yes. Of course, it's about the law. But let's take something from the government, okay? And you get something that you're going to make use of.
Like an inspector oversight agency.
Right. You want to make sure you
have. Or how about the bar? Is the bar, would that be considered one? Like,
well, the bar is evil. You know, they're the
yeah. Well, we have to. We got to wait for that.
But say, for instance, papers that you had mentioned that you wanted to some kind of a government issued information or document or whatever. You want to make sure that the document is true and accurate, and you want to get a copy of that. And sometimes you might have to have that certified, okay?
Okay.
So you have to be careful. You got to make sure that your evidence is rock solid and that it will be accepted in a court of law. And this
These people will not certify anything. You know, they're not going to have any. I mean, could I have it notarized?
Well, again, if you're getting something, a document that is on the record someplace with some agency, some agency of authority or whatever, well, that in itself is self-evident.
Oh, okay. I see.
So that would be accepted.
Okay.
Right. But, for instance, memorandums, okay, you might want to, depending on the case, for instance, like I was building a case, and I have built a case concerning the 17th Amendment, okay? And I wrote a memorandum concerning to back up that the balance of power that was destroyed by the 17th Amendment, okay?
Yeah.
So if I bring in the Second Amendment or the Seventh Amendment or whatever amendment I might want to bring in or any information, you might want to do a memorandum to expound on how it applies to the case and what the law, lay out the law, the Supreme Court rulings maybe, and different things. So I've done a case getting the Bible back in school, and I referred, of course, to the case Engle versus Vitale, which is the Bible in the school. And so I wrote a memorandum on that. Okay, and this is on the violations of the courts that have, prevented the common law from going forward. A faithful performance, for instance, if I've used this a couple of times in court, where I make it clear to the court that it's up to the judge to give faithful performance, especially when they're not given faithful performance. So I'll put that into the case. There's a memorandum of the jurisdiction of natural law. Okay. Again, you refer to a court of record and proceed according to the natural law, and you might make reference to on the natural law, you might make reference to a memorandum on the jurisdiction of the natural law, which is, again, a memorandum that I had written before. And if you're going up to make the point that natural law is also called a court of record, I have a memorandum on that. And then what they use is what's called judicial comity, and they call that the common law, which it's stupidity is really what it is.
They're laughing at us, aren't they, when they say comity?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No. Comity is comity.
Okay? I know, but it of course, but it.
But they are laughing.
Yeah. They're having a good laugh about that. Yeah.
But judicial comity, comity. Okay. Right. That is the common law that they use. So if you go into, if you ever look at any court papers, and in the beginning I was doing this because that's what I thought was the way to go, but it didn't take me long before I realized it was dumb, and it has no power authority at all. But for instance, you go into a court case and they'll make a position and make a point, and then they'll list two or three or four or five cases concerning that particular case. Well, there have been times when I used to argue that way, and I'd go read the cases, and I'd flip the case around. We found cases that they use trying, because they don't do their homework very well. They really don't. Uh-huh. And they'll make points in the case, and I'll lay the case back out and say, hey, look, this case actually supports our position, you know? And, uh-huh. and I'll lay that out and show that and so on. But again, this is what they call common law. If you talk to any lawyer and tell them we're under common law, they'll agree with you. And but if they define common law, if you ask them to define common law, they will tell you it's trial court decisions. Trial court decisions is no decisions at all because it's not the final case. Okay, it's an appealable process. It's only the cases that you can use, the Supreme Court cases, and you can use the appellate courts between, you and the Supreme Court, of course, the trial court and the Supreme Court, and hold that up. But some of them are bad because, remember, sometimes it's in opposition to that which is just, and courts are not to apply. The United States Supreme Court has said this. Courts are not to apply the law. Courts are to apply justice. And there's a big difference between applying the law and justice, because especially their laws, often it's not just at all to begin with. You know, it's something that could be nullified when you're looking at the statutes and different things of that nature. But again, you got to use common sense. You build a logical case. Sometimes it's a situation where you can see, let's say the jury could look at the situation and say, hey, the guy did break the law there, but if I was in that situation, I would have had no choice but to do the same thing. You know, there are circumstances like that.
So if they use, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm just still learning, but I'm going to always be learning. But if they come back with something like some sort of, I don't know what, I'm not sure, but say they come back with some case, and then I could write a memorandum.
When they come up with cases and they say, well, this is similar to that, therefore the judge should rule the same way this case should rule, my response to all of that at this point in time is a thing similar. This is a maxim at law. A thing similar is not necessarily the same thing.
Right. Okay.
That case is not identical to my case. There are other situations going on in my case that's not in that case, and there's other situations going on in that case that's not in my case, and it really has no control or no logical thing to use to in order to try to ask the judge to rule in the same way that they did. So again, the maxim at law, a thing similar, is not necessarily the same thing. It doesn't hold any water. That's number one. Number two, it's comedy. So that's what I would write right here. I wrote a memorandum on comedy, what it is, okay? And so I would make the point that that comedy is nothing to do with common law. None of this applies to the case. And then I would refer to the memorandum of law and comedy. And that's what memorandums are used for. So you have the affidavit, you have the case written itself, okay? And there's a structure for that too, okay? You have the cause of action. We go through all that. It's very logical.
I'm going through it now, and it's like having a big puzzle, but it's okay.
Yeah, because it's all new hack to you. That's why.
Yeah.
Okay. Believe me, I understand that. I remember when I first started getting into it, it seemed overwhelming, but as I kept going through things and through things, I said, "Wait a second, this is really not that difficult." Because the more time you spend with something, you start to structure it in your brain, and then you start to see clearer, and then you start to see the point, and then you say, well, I should have seen that in the beginning, but just that there was too much stuff there to see it, and that's why. But a key thing is this. You got the paperwork. We lay out how to write your papers, all the things you have to write in, the jurisdiction, causes of action, the facts of the case. Then you got your memorandums. You might have 1, 2, 3, 4, as many as you need, usually not too many, but you might have a couple. And then you have, of course, your affidavit, which is the very first thing. I don't even think about writing a case till the affidavit is done, because the affidavit tells the story, and the story will tell you how to make the argument. When you know the story and the facts of the case, now you know how to make the argument in your paperwork.
Well, I'm at a place right. If I was to send these, I've got like at least 8 potential, defendants, more, maybe a few more. But if I were to send them affidavits right now, it would tip them off. And I'm not safe.
Don't send anybody affidavits now.
Yeah. Yeah. But the second tier, like the inspectors who didn't send their reports to me. Stuff like that. I could do those. now. Well, look
at, well, you look at everything you do should be in an affidavit form when you're dealing with the government, and even if you're dealing with the large corporations, you know, depending on the situation, not necessarily.
Right. Okay.
But there's what's called notice and demand, and we do cover that in the court course. Mm-hmm. Okay, and a notice and demand is extremely important, because that you do in an affidavit form is 8 points to be made. You have to cover each one of those 8 points. You're serving it on to the individual that you want information for, or whatever it is that you're doing with communicating. You had mentioned something, communicating with someone. What was it that you mentioned?
An inspector.
Okay, you'd write a notice and demand to the inspector, demanding whatever it is that he was supposed to have done, and you give him so much time to fulfill it. You go through the process.
Right.
First of all, you're probably best to do it just with writing a letter to an inspector. What information?
Well, I've done that. I mean, I've made lots of efforts. Oh no.
Okay, that's where notice and demand comes in.
Okay.
And then in there you lay out the default and what the fact of the matter is concerning that if they don't respond, or what the consequence is going to be if they don't respond. When you study the notice and demands that we have in our course, you'll get the logic after a while. You'll see it. And so notice and demands can be used. Affidavits are used. Memorandums are used. The main part of the case, which you write up, of course, is the key, and it has to be, you know, when you serve it, you have to have a summons put onto it, you have to have an affidavit of service, you know, and again, it's not a lot, but I'm pretty much, you know, making all the points, it's to some degree already, of the paperwork. Mm-hmm. It's not a lot. There's a process of motions that you're going to make. A motion is moving the court. You want the court to move this way. You want the court to make this decision. You want the court to do that. It's called a motion.
Okay.
So you have to have a notice of motion. If you don't have a notice of motion, then nobody's going to respond to it, and it amounts to nothing, and they can just ignore it.
And that comes in a certain sequence, then, doesn't it?
Right. And there's there's gathering the evidence, get involved in getting evidence from the other side.
Well, like with subpoenas, like I need all the emails subpoenaed from at least 2, 3, 4 parties.
Well, I'll
and
tell
I,
you,
I haven't read that yet in here. I know
this might be helpful to people. I didn't have this, but I'm going to use it more often now than I did. If you're on X, I understand Grok, if I'm saying that right, is supposed to be one of the best AIs out there. And
yeah, I heard you talking about that. Yeah.
I mean, you can go to Grok and give them information and tell them what you want and what you want to do, and ask Grok to write it for you, and then you could take it and massage it. And when you, it's a discussion. This was the amazing thing that I found. When they responded back with information and I needed more information, I literally have, it's like having a discussion with an individual, because, you know, you're saying, well, this lacked that, or that didn't work, or I tried that, and then Grok comes back with the next step. Oh, you know, they lay out the question in different words, pretty much, and you'll see whether they're coming with the answer correctly to the questions you're actually asking,
But you don't give the AI the last word, do you? I mean, you have to verify whatever they're saying.
I'm looking for information. Okay. For instance, I'm looking for. I wrote into Grok recently. I just did this, and you know, I've got quite a few U.S. codes that I've, brought together. And matter of fact, they're in the course. It's kind of leverage you can use against the court itself, You know, I asked Grok, I said, give me all of the U.S. codes dealing with subversion. And they hit me up with a whole bunch of codes. Now you got the code numbers. You got a little bit of a summary of each one of these codes, which is really part of the code, written in the code. You can cut and paste the code, throw it into your search engine, and then you'll see the code. You'll be able to cut and paste the code. And then use that code in your case to apply against the judge or against the other side or whatever the case may be, you know?
So like, you know, footnotes, for example, I could put the, you know, there, some of them are abbreviated, you know, and they're pretty long. I could put those in a search engine and it would pull up a certain case. Is that?
Well, look, at again, you know, I wrote footnotes. The purpose of footnotes for me is to make clear my intentions and thoughts and understanding of the words I'm using, okay? You know, because they love to twist words. When I talk about common law, if I use the, and now I'm going to use natural law more than common law, I'll use natural law, common law. But
mm-hmm.
I'll put a footnote, and that footnote will be something, and you got to be careful because I put a lot of stuff in footnotes. It's not that you're going to use all that information on that one page. You're going to pick and choose maybe this Supreme Court ruling or maybe that code if you're going after a judge or something out of Black's Law to define what a court of record is or what a common law court is, okay, mm-hmm. and that it operates according to the common law. You don't use okay. everything in there. It's just a variety of information. And sometimes in one case you might use this Supreme Court ruling, or maybe you'll use two of them, or sometimes you may use that Supreme Court ruling for this particular case.
So I pull it up and then I print it and read it, right? And I can put it to the side for reference?
Well, yeah, you can do that. But you see, what you do, I made it so you can download all of them, so I presume you downloaded them, right?
Not the footnotes yet. I mean, I'm getting
to
that.
You right-click on it, and you click download, save as, save to, and then uh-huh. it'll be a zip file.
Oh, okay.
And once you open up the zip file, it'll be in a folder that says, footnotes, and in there you might see hundreds of...
Okay. Papers. I'm just jumping ahead on that. I apologize. I'm just...
It's good to discuss it so other people understand it, too.
Oh, okay, good. Oh, good, yeah.
It's just, you know, a lot of information that you can use. And a lot of my footnotes and Supreme Court rulings are things other lawyers never seen before. It's totally outside of their orbit. I mean, because they are so focused in on Roman law, they're so focused in on case law, which they call common law, and they lay their whole case out with all that garbage, and then they apply statutes to you in that case. And my cases, statutes have nothing to do with me. I don't work for the government. I'm not operating commercial activity. Even when they're rules, okay, they have a rule and they require you to respond in a certain way using a particular rule, okay, which I find repugnant, okay. But in any event, if it's not in confliction with the rules of common law, in other words, common sense, then I'll use that rule and I'll make the note that I'll accept that rule because it is in harmony with the common law. Now, if they come up with a rule that is repugnant to the natural law, I'll make that point that it's not going to be applied against me because it's repugnant to the common law. It has nothing to do with me. Okay?
Yeah.
They don't like that. They'll apply the rule anyway because they're evil. But again, I don't write my case to win in the court. I write my case to win on the appellate process. Because they're never going to rule for me.
Right. So it's just the necessary preliminary to expect it to happen almost. You know,
right.
I mean, yeah.
Always write your cases if you're going to appeal it. And that's why
you
make it as clean as possible. In other words, your minimum amount of words, less is more to begin with. Don't leave anything out, though. But the way you say things, try to say it with the minimum words. And, you know, and again, sometimes when you go back to massage it, you'll find a particular word and you'll take a look at that word and maybe find another word to use in that instead of that, which would be better, really lay it out better, position better. You always in your case, always. And you should be writing your case right now. Not only to be prepared for when the time comes, but also it's an exercise in the process. It's a long
which
process.
Chapter is there a chapter that I mean I've got them. I'm it's just there's a lot. I'm trying to keep it really simple, but is there a section in the course that shows you like an outline on how to write the case? I mean, I have a lot of things I've written, but I guess I just have to keep going a little longer and then my questions won't be so vague, but I...
Well, again, you know, it's a lot of information. It seems overwhelming. Once you start to get the picture of this thing, all of a sudden it's going to click. Look at...
Yeah.
You, no one had, when you were born and you were a child, no one had to sit down with you to teach you to speak, to teach you to communicate. It just happened, okay?
Yeah.
And that's true of anything. If you spend, you know, a child, you know, it's just the nature of a child. They want to communicate. They respond. They don't understand most of what you're saying, but they pick up on a lot of clues, and all of a sudden they figure this out and they figure that out, and that's the way it was with all of us.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing. If you spend a lot of time with something, you know, I come to a conclusion many years ago. I don't try to remember anything. I just try to understand everything. I don't let a word go by that I do some, of course, but I generally speaking, I don't let a word go by, I don't let a phrase go by that I don't understand. If I'm doing a Bible study and I'm looking deep into the spiritual things in a particular verse or chapter, there's not one word I'm going to let go that I'm not going to not understand in order to, you know, be able to expound.
Right.
Particular,
yeah.
Bible study. Well, that's the same thing with law. You remember, the Bible is a law book, and law is constructive. Line upon line, precept upon precept. Here a little, there a little. That's what law is. It's just it's the building up of the facts and the law, and law is constructive. So when you go to these things, you want to, you know, again, don't try to memorize anything. Just try to understand everything. Don't let nothing go by. And this I learned but through the school of hard knocks, particularly in a court case. If you ignore one little thing and you just let it go, or you don't look it up, the point that they're making, then that's the one that's going to get you. Okay? So I rebut everything that they say. Whatever they say, I rebut. You know, it's a rebuttal. Now, basically, the pleadings is what you're looking for, which is chapter 2, I think, okay?
Okay, right, okay.
Opening a court of record, the anatomy of a court, an action at law, okay?
Okay.
So that lays out the anatomy of it. Let's see, you have an index number form, okay, an RJI. Most states combine them together. I put a seal on every one of my cases.
You have your own seal?
Have my own seal, and
that's part of it, right? Okay,
well,
I'm sorry. Yeah,
well, no,
I can make a seal.
Yeah, you don't have to have one, but I think it's more impressive. You know, I have a seal.
Oh yeah. Do you have a stamp? You know, like you could put the seal on, and then you know,
no,
like I had a.
It's not a stamp.
Oh.
It makes the impression. In a circle, and it's court of record,
right.
New York,
okay.
And then I got. I think I have my birth year in there, if I remember, on mine, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the year I was born. And, you know, on the seal I have for the grand jury, I have 1776 in the center. You know, Jefferson spoke about seals, and he had an impressive seals. But anyway, so you can
right.
have a seal. You don't have to have it. You use the word seal next to it. I swear everything. All my papers are sworn to, okay?
Wow.
Not only my affidavit, the paper I write, I swear to it. So you have a file on demand, you have the federal cover sheet, if it's going to the federal court, or you have some cover sheet, no matter what case you're going into. You have the summons, you have the action that you're writing, an action at law, you have memorandums in support of the action. You have your affidavits. I put in often, depending on the case, especially if I'm going up against the government, I put in the law of the case. And you can use the law of the case that I've written. You can alter it, do whatever you want with it. You want your affidavit of service. So this is a picture of the pleadings, okay? Once you go through this, you'll start to see the logic. This is all logic. They have not changed the process of the court. This is what's called due process. They don't change the process, okay? Then you have your cause of action. This gets involved breaking down of how you write a case. Inside your case, when you write a case and you write your pleadings or you write your action at law, okay, and this opening a court of record, and basically it's pretty much the same with the action at law. They come together as one. But once you get into that action at law, okay, inside there you have to cover certain things, okay? You have to have a cause of action. If you don't have a cause of action, you know, what are you there for?
I've got a lot of causes of action.
Right,
yeah.
You just lay them out the right way. Most causes of actions have three legs, some have four legs. In other words, you have to have 3 points that you have to prove for that court of action to be valid, okay? And
okay.
There are lots of causes of action. And you can Google causes of actions up in the search bar.
Oh, yeah.
We got a lot in the course here.
It wasn't just the way that the house was sold to me. It was the way it was sold to me. It was the way that they handled the situation. They violated my trust. And there's several things. The house is falling apart. And I'm just mumbling.
Let me understand your case a little better. Your case is about a house you bought, and there were problems.
Right.
With that.
Yeah, it was the.
When the house was bought, you went to a closing, and the closing usually has lawyers. Did you have a lawyer?
No.
Okay.
They didn't. I've had no walkthroughs, and.
Closing, you didn't have a lawyer make the closing for you. You did that yourself.
It was all done for me by the title company, and
okay.
I mean they
them mm-hmm. for not doing their job, because look at.
Yeah.
Whenever you buy a house, it is required by law for an inspection of the house to be done, and a write-up of all of the potential problems. And it is incumbent upon the person who's selling that home to identify a particular problem. So if you bought a house, let's say that has a water problem in the basement. Let's say every once in a while when you get the heavy rains, it totally floods out and you get 3 foot of water in your basement. I mean,
yeah.
I had a house like that, by the way, once before. It was a stone.
Yeah.
Stone foundation, but then if they
this
don't,
this is really good information. Yeah, I should have had a lawyer.
This is extremely important to understand. If they do not tell you in this before the sale takes place, you know, in the process of the sale, look, there is a problem. I have to let you know that there is a problem in the basement, and on heavy rains we do get water coming in, and maybe they put a sump pump in there, maybe they didn't, maybe you got a dirt floor in the foundation, depending on how old the house is, lots of things. But, you know, the inspector should come in, okay, and they should be able to look at everything. They look at the structure of the house, they look at the size of the beams, make sure that it's, for instance, your floor. Thick enough and deep enough, 2x8s, 2x10s, 2x12s, depending on the span, and whatever girders are required. They'll look at the electrical system, the plumbing system. They'll find the faults. Hey, there's a problem with this and a problem with that. And then you have the foundation. Maybe there's a problem with the foundation. Maybe there's no footing drain, so the water isn't being drained away. Maybe
didn't disclose anything except minor things.
The point
you know?
Is, they didn't enclose. If they didn't let you know about these things. Okay.
Right.
You have a really good case. Because
and also in this corporate law, I had only 2 years to speak up about the non-disclosure, but then it goes 2 years, then I think 3 years, it's something else, and then there's 6 years to contracts, but it's all mushy, and the lawyers didn't do anything, and But with common law, there's no statute of limitations on the truth, from what I can.
There's no statute of limitation. The only thing that limits your case, okay, is the age of the case. Maybe the facts kind of fall away, it disappears, people die,
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had a few of those, but
so if those kind of things happen, then obviously that limits your case. But
well, I can go back to the people, though, who did it. You know, I mean, it wasn't just one party. There were
right.
several.
Right. Well, they will try to pull on to you because, remember, these people write the law. They protect themselves. And they probably have statutes of limitations in the whole process, claiming, well, with the situation here, we're closing this or that. If you don't respond in X amount of years, then the statute of limitations prevents you and blah, blah,
and
blah.
And things have gotten worse.
You're not in the statutory court, so there are no statutes. They're not going to acknowledge that, but that's the case you have to make. Okay, remember, because you're looking for the appeal, the appellate process, and you might be able to get through the appellate process, and they might agree with you if you can get to the appellate process, because that's another struggle to get to. The other thing is that if we get our courts of justice back, which is what we're working on, but it takes the people working with us to get that done, because we need support, financial support, and people helping, you know, volunteering time and stuff like that. And we got to go professional to really get this done. And that requires the critical mass that we're looking for. We just don't have enough money coming in to really pay anybody anything.
Right.
So, but in any event, you know, you have to, I forget where I was going with that, but...
I know other people are waiting too, but I mean, this is a continuing conversation.
Actually, you're the only one left in the queue. If anybody else wants to get into it. Oh, it's 11 o'clock anyway, so I'm at the end of the program.
Well, you know, it has a 30-year loan, and it should never have been given a loan. I had one inspector who did file a report with me, tell me that it would be red tagged. And I was told by one inspector who did not file a report that he believed the house had been dropped. And so I even took pictures showing just to represent what he said, not to be evidence, but beg your pardon?
Was it a modular when he said it was dropped?
It's a manufactured home.
Okay. All right.
And the certification engineer said this house has never been moved, but the county says it was moved in 2019. And then that fraudulent document was filed in the appraiser's report. So it's a mess.
These are the documents we're talking about right here, right now. This is what I'm talking about. This is the evidence that you're going to use in this case.
Yeah.
You need to gather it together. And
yeah, I have it. I just have to get, you know, John, I'm insane from it. I mean, this has been like 3 years of just, you know, and then I found you guys because I... You know, and I don't mean to go off on tangents because it's not hard for me to do. But when I watched a few cases go down in the last couple of years, and then I saw that I didn't watch the Trump trial because I couldn't stomach it. I mean, I thought it was so absolutely weird. And then even Alex Jones was denied his freedom of speech, you know, so it's like something's up here. And then when I talked to the bar, because they weren't allowing me to file a complaint against the lawyer, they wouldn't let me do it. They said, well, you can go start your own bar if you want. And so it's like, okay, I don't have due process. And I didn't even really know what that was, except that I don't have the full protection of the law. That's what I saw it as. You know,
the bar is supposed to also, you know, monitor themselves, and the lawyers that are connected in the bar, they're supposed to have a process and to deal with problems when they're not doing the right thing. Of course, that's just...
How do you do that when you go to the supervisor and they won't let you go anywhere else?
Because it's a facade. It doesn't...
Yeah.
They just, well, you know, you're finding...
I could send them an affidavit, right?
Yeah, you're coming up through the system saying it's all BS, but the whole system is supposed to be that way, and it's not. But look at, you know, all these things about the house are supposed to be told to you. And if you don't have all that information, then they defrauded you, okay?
Oh, yeah, they did. Yeah.
But let me just quickly go to, for people who are listening in, and the importance of this course. This is an extremely important course. Everyone should take this course. You know, even if you take years to go through it, because you could move at your own pace, and it'll always be there once you get in. But here at National Liberty Alliance, we get a lot of courses. And if you come down to our courses, most of our courses are free of charge. A couple of our courses... we ask, you know, that people give us $5 a month or more to support what we're doing, you know, and then they get access to the other couple of courses we have. But of course, if people can't even afford that $5 a month or more, we'll get them in anyway, because we really want to get the people educated. But the most important course, in my opinion, is the court access in the common law course. And we do charge for that course. It's $125. I know of some lawyer that gives a course, and when I bought in, I think it was $350. And now I hear he's up to $450. He's probably even higher than that now. But he doesn't teach anything like we teach. I mean, he does teach the due process because I learned the due process from him. But he does not teach the common law. He doesn't teach the Constitution. There are a lot of things he doesn't cover. We cover everything you really need to know about filing a case and building that case. And so that $125, of course, is supports what we're doing. I mean, we... A couple of times a month, people will buy that course, and it gives us the money to survive, keep the lights on here. So,
I wish people would come here. I mean, this is not the kind of thing, though, that people who are just joiners, you know, they want to join and then they're like a part of. But no, this is you know, you gotta roll your sleeves up and get into it. You know, it's just really. I get kind of wiped out, but then I just rest and I come back. You know, it's just the way it is, you know.
Every day should be a learning process. Every day you should learn something new, especially if you're pursuing something. And just to keep your mind going, you know, you should be learning things every day.
Well, the same inspector who did not file a report with me, who said the house may have been dropped, I showed him because I did pay for an inspector to come out, and it was.
Write that down. He said that, correct?
I have it. It's part of everything I've written down. Go ahead.
He didn't write it down.
That's the thing.
Did he say why he thought that house was dropped?
Well, he said something about there. When they move them, they put an axle like in the middle of the building, and it might have fallen. But see, on the outside, there are like these pieces of like lath that are over like joints between the panels, and there's like four or five of them. And he goes, "There's something back here." And then on the other side of the wall, the floor slopes slightly because when I mopped before he came, I used some OxyClean, and it soaks up. And it was running toward that wall. And then he said, "I bet if you pull these off, you're going to find a problem." But I can't find anybody who's willing to come out and pull them off.
Well, you know, I was a contractor for, I don't know, 40 years or so. And when I started off, I started off in simple things. And we were doing repairs on mobile homes, okay? Building decks, installing air conditioning, doing heating systems, replacing them, all kinds of little stuff. And then eventually we started doing modular homes, and then frame construction. And I built up, I did heavy construction, and so on and so forth. But I'll tell you, with some of the problems that you're talking about, the building up or the padding, you're probably talking about on the ends of the house where the two come together to meet, number one. And sometimes you have to rack a home, and that could cause a problem too, because if the foundation is off, particularly on modular homes, you'll rack them, okay? Which means you have to throw it out.
Well, the pylons underneath are at angles, and I have, you know, it's like I've got some photos of that. And then I did have a really good inspector come out after close, he got some really good pictures.
You bought the house.
Big pardon?
The house was already built.
I beg your pardon?
The house that you were buying was already built, or you were building it?
No, this was that I bought.
It was
already here. It's right. 1986. They said it was an 88, and I talked to my realtor, and I said, "Isn't that a little old?" And he goes, "But it's refurbished. And, you know, we've got cracking floors at the doors and all kinds of..."
I'm going to tell you, one of the problems sometimes, well, a lot of the problems sometimes, depending on, sometimes you'll have one contractor, maybe one contractor did the foundation and then somebody else did the house on top of
it. There's no foundation, though. It's all on
piers?
The piers, but they call it a foundation when it's maybe a 4x4 piece of mason, or they've got 3/4-inch plywood holding up one of them down there, and it's getting worse.
You don't have a basement then.
No, I wanted to go under there. I was ready to crawl under there, and nobody would take me under there.
Okay,
and
hold on a minute. Uh-huh. So you have a modular home with skirting.
Right.
Okay, so that's almost like a mobile home. It's kind of a double wide. I don't know.
No, it's a single wide, and it's actually considered a manufactured home. I mean, I got an FHA loan on it.
So it's also referred to as a mobile home. It came in on wheels. Okay, the axles, and pulled them off. They dropped them. Usually drop them. They leave them under the house because if you ever want to move them again, you can reuse them. They'll put them on block piers, and then they'll shim up with wood. And that in itself could be a problem. You know, it has to be perfectly level. Okay.
I'm at the bottom of a grade. And the water runs through and causes this cliche soil to move around and all that. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and in those homes, those mobile homes, every once in a while, they need to be leveled, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And that could fix some of the problems, all right?
Well, it's really not fixable, though. I mean, it's not sealed. I mean, I've got like one day in the front bathroom, I accidentally left the water on, so it flowed over onto the floor. And it just was a few minutes, but I was outside and I hear this running water, and it was running. The wall's not sealed to the floor, and it was running down outside underneath the skirting. And I mean,
the underlayment puffed up.
Not yet. Well, at the door, it's starting to puff up. I've got diatomaceous earth on there to keep the bacteria and the parasites out of the house.
A lot of pressed wood in there, you know, becomes a problem.
See, this should. I mean, honestly, I'm not an expert on these things. I have another whole profession that, so I can appreciate somebody who really knows what they're doing. But it's just that. I know that when I saw this house after I had, you know, after close, I was able to come in and really look at it, and they wouldn't let me come in for very long. I was here an hour and a half, and there's all this drama that was going on around it. They just wanted to get it done, you know, and so it's like I didn't really have a chance, but just at a glance, I could tell. And then there were cracks in the floor that they went all the way across the room.
Who did the inspection? Was a contractor or an engineer or an architect?
Well, out here they have building inspectors, you know, home inspectors that are licensed.
So when you get the certification, when you're buying a house or selling a house, you have someone come in to do the inspection. You find out all the flaws, all the problems with it, and if you're selling a house,
they didn't disclose them though.
It's up to the lawyers on the closing to require this. Okay.
There was no lawyer. Yeah, it was really.
You went to a place. Is this in a mobile home park or is it a mobile home?
I'm out in the middle of nowhere. Okay. That's where I wanted to be. You know.
All right. Well, we're gonna have to end the program for now, but we can talk some more on this maybe if you got some more info. But
it'll wear you out. I'm telling you, I have observation skills because I'm a photographer, and that doesn't really, you know, except that I'm used to looking at things really thoroughly. I'm an operating technician, and
the inspectors you're talking about, to get a copy of their inspection, and one says they don't have anything in paper, whatever the case may be. Who are these people? What's their credentials? Are they? Is it a contractor? Is it an individual selling mobile homes or modulars? Is it an engineer? Is it an architect? Is it a firm? I mean,
they have, like, you can call to have home inspectors come out.
Right. Be careful. I'm getting to my point. You don't ever want to have your home inspected except by someone who is an engineer or an architect. These are the people with real skills and understand the process.
Okay.
You can get someone who is a contractor, and if that individual has a lot of background in construction, okay, they could be as good as an engineer or an architect.
Sure, yeah.
But you'll get a lot of people that kind of new, maybe they've been in the business 5-10 years.
Oh, yeah.
They don't have a lot of experience in certain areas, and they'll sell their services as an inspector. And they'll run through a certain process. There is a checklist that you can get. You can probably even find it online.
I think I've had it or I've seen it. Yeah.
And reports off of this, this checklist and stuff, but you have to have the eye and the understanding. You have to know structure. You have to know stress points. You have to look at the. You don't have
I had one, but he won't complete the report now. I can't reach him.
Yeah.
And I mean I know kind of where he is, but. I mean, I've made efforts to do that. I've even sent him photos to say, remember we talked about this, and please send your report.
Mm-hmm. What's his background? Who is he?
Oh, well, because we're on an open line, I don't want to say his name, if you don't mind. I mean, I could tell you privately, but.
Is he an architect? Is he an engineer?
Oh, he's a structural engineer.
Okay.
And he's worked with these homes for like all his life. And this house is supposed to expire. He said these houses expire after about 40 years, and it was in 86. Mm-hmm. And so, if you see it, it's nothing to write home about, but I was going to put a double roof over it, a wood roof, and work with it, you know. And
you can't do these things. I used to install roofs over the metal roofs, but you have to make sure that, first of all, you have a good foundation on that.
It's not level.
It's not. Years, you really don't want to get too involved in that.
No, I won't do that now. I didn't know this was going on until after I had been here. And I even asked my realtor if I could grab a sleeping bag and come over and just sleep here a couple nights. And they wouldn't let me be here without supervision. So it's like, beg your pardon?
I don't understand what you're saying there.
When I used to lease houses, some people would let me come and stay overnight and just kind of sleep here at night. I'd grab a sleeping bag, sleep on the floor, and just kind of get to know the place. Mm-hmm. And I was already, we were waiting for my money to, because I cashed in a bunch of gold.
So this is before
silver.
The purchase?
Just before the, no, well, before close. But they already had my earnest money.
You're in contract. It's before the closing, but you're in contract, and they said you could go into the home.
No.
That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. It's replete out here.
We're almost after 11.
Okay, dear. I know it's late there. Thank you. It's like, and I feel so bad about that man in Pennsylvania. I'm really sad about that. I'll just do what I can on my own and hope that it's inspiring somebody. But I got to start maybe start writing, like breaking it up. I've tried it a few times, and I just, this was before I started studying. The studying has really given me hope, and because I'm not stupid. And I was right about this place. That was the thing that, thank you. I mean, God's with me. I've just got an assignment here, and I didn't know this was going to happen to me, So, anyway.
All right. Well, we're going to end the program for the night.
Okay.
We covered a lot of stuff. I think we gave a lot of good information and information on the course, which we're kind of floating through right now. For those who may be interested, it's a 90-hour course. Each part of the court, I believe, is about 3 hours apiece. So it's a video course, and it's once you sign in, it's available indefinitely. You come up anytime and work on the course and come back and use a lot of the information on the course in the future as you're writing papers, going back to review things because you're filing a case, and everybody should really consider this course, because I'm telling you, you never know when you're going to run into a problem. And you're going to need to go into a court, and a judge, a lawyer will charge you a fortune. They don't have your concerns in their mind at all. They really don't. To them, it's all about money.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thank you, John. I'll be in touch. Take care.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
See you next Monday.